After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BeHereNow.
So if you're a creative, let's just coming back to that, and if you fully have a vision and has no commercial dimension to it whatsoever, and you become in service of manifesting that, whatever, Michelangelo, you know, is there any such thing as pure creativity that is not based on having some extension into livelihood dimension and therefore other people, and therefore dealing with other people in a compassionate, bodhisattva-like way? That's kind of the summary of, and I don't even want to answer that. I mean, I just want to throw it out there for like-minded people to contemplate, chew on. And this would be a good discussion to have, you know, in a workshop or something.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast with David Nichtern on the Be Here Now Network. All of us here at Be Here Now and Dharma Moon sincerely hope this podcast finds you as well as can be, and we are happy that you are joining us. My name is Michael Kammers, and today I'm in the Podkick chair as well as the Monologist chair, for we have another episode of David's View in store for you in mere moments. In this episode, David and I are spontaneously discussing creativity and compassion. Two subjects very close to our hearts and life paths. I generally keep the introductory remarks brief on our David's View episodes, and today will be no exception. However, our global online mindfulness platform, Dharma Moon, has some events lined up in the near future we would like to share with you. We have two upcoming info sessions for our world-class 100-hour mindfulness meditation teacher training coming up soon, and they both have very special guests. On Wednesday, August 31st, we have Duncan Trussell with us. Duncan is a comedian, podcast host, and creator of the acclaimed Netflix animated show, The Midnight Gospel. And on Wednesday, September 14th, we have Professor Robert Thurman, Buddhist scholar, author, and co-founder of Tibet House US, the cultural center of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Both of these are on the Zoom platform, and if you cannot attend in person, you can watch the video. If you do attend in person, however, you'll have an opportunity to be in discussion with Duncan, Robert, and David, which is pretty cool, at the Q&A session at the end of these programs. So if you are interested, please head over to dharmamoon.com to register. And on a quick personal note, I'm a graduate of this program who's now an assistant director, and in my personal experience, whether or not you want to become a teacher, it is a great way to deepen your practice and understanding of mindfulness. And it is a transformative experience in the safe and brave container of mindful community and skilled mentorship. And if you don't want to do the full training, you can just take the first weekend, which is a tour of Buddha Land with David. These podcasts are evergreen, so if you're listening at a future date, please head over to www.dharmamoon.com and see what we are up to, as we are always running programs that build community from a foundation of the study and practice of mindfulness and Buddha Dharma. Dharma Moon, visualize, manifest, connect. You know, before I started meditating, I spent a lot of time listening to podcasts on Be Here Now about people talking about their meditative experiences. And if you're one of those people, join us and we'll all learn how to meditate together for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay, that's all the stuff for this episode. If you like what you hear, please head over to www.BeHereNowNetwork.com/David and hear all of our CSM content. So that's it for the intro of this episode. And since I put all the plugs up front, there will be no outro monologue. So now, it is our privilege and pleasure to present to you Creativity and Compassion.
So, you mentioned rousing the energy. And of course, in one analogy, the life force is coiled at the base of the spine like a serpent, you know. And Kundalini, and you raise that up. And then it emerges. You can see pictures of Buddha with the big hood of the serpent over his head, protecting him. It's not a direct reference to Kundalini in that context. And in our Buddhist tradition, we don't mess with Kundalini per se, in terms of trying to manipulate it superficially and, you know, for its own sake. There's energy practices, but they're not particularly public, and they're also not particularly for ego aggrandizement situation. So our topic, again, was triggered by our spontaneous communication between, in the Bardo, between podcasts. We take 10 minutes between recording another one. And you mentioned, what about creativity? Because it is Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast. And
based on the book of the same name out on Wisdom Publication.
Yeah, so you know, and if you want the big picture on any of these things we're talking about, it could be an interesting read or listen for you. However, in this bite-sized teabag size exposition of creativity, we came across the idea, we were talking about being a band leader, which both of us have been, about the idea of either as a band leader or an entrepreneur, head of a company, whatever, sometimes you need to fire people, which is so, you know, sort of such an interesting thing to contemplate, that that's part of running something, is telling somebody that they're not going to be part of it anymore. We have the Donald Trump model, where he relished firing people. That's kind of intriguing, holding the fort on one side. And then there's the other side extreme, where we can't do it. And something needs to be moved along and cut, and we just are too afraid or too considerate, too, we think, maybe concerned about that person's welfare. And so we don't do it. This is a big study if you're, you know, if you're in the position where you, like as you are as a band leader, you hire and fire. When you hire somebody, you're giving them a leg up into a situation. It's a very positive, you're making a connection, you're endorsing them, you're giving them a really positive, you know, moment. And when you fire them, many people feel very depleted. It's a real art form, and you know, they could doubt their own self-worth, and also you're affecting their livelihood, you're affecting their family livelihood. So if you have a creative vision, I think we're going to limit it to creativity. Let's say you're making a record, or you're doing, like you do, leading a big band, and you're also a Buddhist practitioner. So we're mixing creativity, spirituality, and livelihood in this conversation. How do you make a decision about caring properly for, let's just be real specific, your band members, who are human beings, first of all, and people you care about, and the professional obligations and the creative invective to get that work up to its highest possible level? So let's start there.
Yeah, I think the work up to the highest possible level for a long time, I prioritized that over individual or collective well-being, right? So I was too far on one side. And then...
You had it prioritized.
Yeah, when I first started, it was just, that was all, it didn't matter. It's just, we got to do this thing awesome. And like, you know, that was like when I was in my 20s, and just the context of the band was magnetizing enough that people would want to do it. And I could just, you know, be a brash 20-something who didn't have those considerations as much. And then it moved into the place where, like, more in our 30s, when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, livelihood became an issue, right? And then I was so concerned about just keeping people that, like, I would just go into idiot compassion just to do anything to keep it together.
Okay, Mike, explain idiot compassion to the people out there.
Good, right? So,
and where it came from and so forth.
So that's a term that Trungpa Rinpoche coined. And it's when you're not actually acting compassionately, which implies like reduction of suffering or some kind of skillful means. And we get sort of caught in our own discomfort and, you know, or cowardice even, or perceived sense of lack in oneself, where we're not serving or benefiting the situation by taking the easy way out and doing something that might be perceived as compassionate, like keeping somebody in the band longer than they should when they're not performing up to their level, or they have addiction issues or whatever it may be. And you're actually sort of compounding individual or collective suffering in the way that you're acting, because you're not clearly seeing what the most skillful action is in the situation. Does that sound?
Yeah. I mean, and if to make it simple, it's using compassion to preserve a comfort zone rather than to create clarity and benefit, a genuine benefit in the situation. So it becomes dull. And in contrast, there's a kind of considered to be a sharp, even wrathful, even ruthless aspect of compassion, which is portrayed in certain deities. In some sense, Manjushri here has some element of that. It's cutting through confusion and getting to a very clear place about what is happening, what's not happening, which should ultimately be for everybody's benefit, because it's not generated by aggression or the need to dominate or control. So this is very tricky if you're, for example, I'm going to give you an example from my life. I have run several Dharma centers in my life. I've been an entrepreneur. I've been a music producer in the Dharma world, and I'm going to go on record as saying this: we simply do not turn anyone away from the Dharma world. Now, that doesn't mean we just let people crawl all over it, and you know, just go, oh, I don't have any money, I can't pay for this, or you know, and just develop, you know, self-aggrandizing, sloppy habits in relation to actually learning. But the way Rinpoche used to say it is, we don't give up on anyone. Mm. Now, that is so challenging. That's a bodhisattva perspective. Bodhisattva does not discriminate who's doing being a good person. And, you know, it's not Santa Claus. Everybody gets a gift under the Christmas tree of the bodhisattva, you know. So that is such a deep perspective. I personally have taken this vow. So I have to live by this perspective. I don't live up to it every day, of course, but that anybody who appears in my purview, just magically, synchronously, by accident, on purpose, that there's an intention at least to serve them, to serve their best interest, to connect, to not withdraw. There are so many Mahayana practices that teach us how not to withdraw from even challenging encounters, like having to fire somebody, for example. So, but as a creative, and like you said, there's a kind of perfectionism. You know what this is supposed to sound like. You know what this is supposed to feel like. And you go, this, in service of this project, not just my getting accolades for it, in service of the art itself, the creative process itself, if it's collaborative, if it's dance, if it's music, is this person cutting it? You know, if you were the god of or goddess of creation, and you looked and said, yeah, this is what I had in mind for Beethoven's Fifth Symphony here, and you know, fourth double bass player cannot play the line or is consistently late for rehearsal or has a kind of intonation problems or a sour attitude working with the rest of the orchestra. At what point do you say, I love you? I serve you. I pray for you. I will do anything for you, but you're fired. There you go.
I just, one, Bodhisattva Christmas. That's a whole episode. Because if it was compassionate, when you open that gift, it might not be what you want at all.
Oh,
yeah. Right? So that's a different discussion. But
also, Bodhisattva Christmas.
Bodhisattva Christmas. I'm just Maharaji, kick him out of the temple. Don't kick him out of your heart. There's an art to that. But so now we're talking about, you know, so I navigated my creative project into an institution. And then that was when things really shifted in my leadership, when I had to develop these skills to say, I'm sorry, we need to have a discussion because there's a professional threshold here.
Professional threshold.
Needs to be met, right? So once this professional threshold is met, we can play as much as we want, right? Because that's in the music. Because you're talking about creativity, you're talking about music, these things transcend our small systems, right? But we are working with them within systems, right? So this professional threshold needs to be met. So the entire, our microsystem of this band can continue to thrive in well-being, community, livelihood, and creativity within the system that we're in.
Right.
So at this point, that's not happening. So we need to have a discussion about it. And it's not personal. It's just framed in this manner.
I know my heart, my grandmother's heart. I mean, me as grandmother, not my actual grandmother. And you know, I mentioned in, you know, in Awakening from the Daydream that there's something called grandma's wisdom in Buddhism, which is just, you know, how your grandmother loves you. It's just like when they say good things skip a generation, that's quite literal. You know, many people have described relationship with a grandma or grandpa that is so tender and supportive and nurturing. That part of my being really struggles with what you just said. It's okay. You know, I even can take on her voice, you know, it's all going to be okay. You just have to learn the music a little bit better. And then you come back Thursday, it'll be okay. You know, and to give the kind of, if there's a version of the bodhicitta that's like steel, I guess it's Manjushri's sword. It's right here. It's why I have it. Like, I want him to cut me if I'm messing up. You know, it's like you want to get that sharp, that precise in order to really serve. But here's the thing, Mike. The muse, let's say there is some kind of, because we don't know where these creative things come from. I never met anybody who really knows. The muse is the closest thing that somebody said. And I heard a talk that Neil Young gave about the muse many years ago at South by Southwest. And he said, look, when the muse calls, I got to get out my catcher's mitt. And almost at the level of like, you know, somebody else can pick up my kids at school if that's happening. It can be in creative people that's famous. They can sometimes be very not good people. Now, your ideal is, okay, this person's a great artist. Like Yo-Yo Ma comes to mind. I don't know him, but it's so obvious that he's a great person and benevolent, but also professional threshold through the roof. So we like to think it is possible, but we know people who are hitting a really high level of art representation, and either they themselves have some serious personal defects, you know, which are bypassed, and, you know, everybody around them lets them get away with it, or they're literally a terror working for or with. And I've worked with, I wondered at times whether being a nice or a good person is not consistent or coherent with being very demanding artist, and where those two lines cross. So we're sharing that. I hope there's people out there who can share this particular dilemma of if you want to be a bodhisattva and a great artist, what, you know, which comes first.
Well, it gets a little slippery here because a bodhisattva's wisdom transcends the culture, the cultural container that it's in. So like even what we're talking about in running a company or being within a system. And so we're merging our creativity within systems and also that involve livelihood, right? So how are you defining success?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, that's a chapter in the book. How do you define success?
It's shifted over the years. Can we sort of place it within creativity?
Yeah.
So creative success. On one level, I believe creativity is like a river. It's always flowing. And just being in the awareness of that flow right now, right? And when we're in that awareness of that flow, it seems like there it's a little more compassionate than being like a whitewater rapids rushing through things, right? We do have obstacles and we need to find ways to move through them, right? But even slow moving water goes through a mountain after time, but I'm not clearly articulating success. So creative, as somebody who has chosen, which is an important point in your book, if you're choosing to make a livelihood.
However, even slow moving water moves through a mountain in time. Go ahead.
So I'm someone who's chosen to make a living with my creativity.
Right.
So, and that's been a journey. So it includes well-being. If I am successfully creating something that aesthetically reaches a vision, but I cannot sustain my own well-being or the well-being of my community, that's no longer success. So channeling that creativity in a way that involves individual and collective well-being, to me, that is success now.
Wow. And what about making money?
That's a part of well-being in this system.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. That's where you get the money part in, the business part in. To have well-being, you need to have some money.
And even like in the Lojong slogans, like there's teachings about how to be a practitioner. You need, as a layperson, you need a right livelihood, right? So all these things circle back on each other.
So throw this into the pile. I have a student who's a musician in Denmark. And one of the great things about the world, you have students all over the world and conversations going on with different cultures. He's a composer, kind of avant-garde composer. And bass player. And in that country, all he has to do is say, apply for a grant. And it's not like a competitor, you know, that's fine. You want to be a bass player. The state is all up for that. And he doesn't really have to have a hit record or, you know, the MK Orchestra would be, you know, just playing down the street in Copenhagen. And, you know, if you didn't have enough money to pay everybody, government considers it worthwhile. So as I'm sitting there talking to him, I'm going like, man, that is such a different reality than I have had to deal with. So the idea is that, and I think also there's comes to mind storing up nuts for winter if you're a creative person. You might have one that does really good and makes a lot of money or gets a lot of recognition, and one that you liked every bit as much. It's like kids, goes out there and can't get arrested, or you didn't have the time and energy to put into it. So you tend to go for the hits, you know, for the big moments. Because they're going to sustain the non-hits and the lower moments of interaction. But so there's two qualities to being creative. You said you're doing for your livelihood. One is you have to get up every day and reinvent yourself, right? There is no template that you're fitting into, unless you're like, you know, the TV shows used to have like orchestras on them. And like if you were in the Johnny Carson band, or if you're in the David Letterman band, you just show up there, or the Saturday Night Live band, and that's your livelihood. You don't really have to be every day thinking, how do I get a gig? How do I create something? But if you're creating something and that is going to be the meal, the thing that is generating the activity and the return, how is it possible not to bias it towards some kind of temporal success? Like if you're writing songs, how is it possible not to go, I hope one of these is a hit, for example, or gets into a movie score, or, you know, other than that, well, that's beautiful. That's just exactly what I meant. It's 6 people have heard it and they all loved it. And 3 of them are my family. You know, how do you follow through with the creative energy that you put into it? A, tapping into some kind of livelihood portal, and B, tapping into some feeling that you've been heard, you've been seen, you've been acknowledged for what you do in the world. I rest my face.
I have been studying like embodied rhythm with a phenomenal drummer and teacher, Amir Zeev. And he was relating to me, and Amir, I love you. I didn't ask for permission to share this story, so I'll check in with you. But Amir recorded with Ornette Coleman towards the end of Ornette's life. Now, Ornette's uncompromising. So that is someone who like didn't even make the decision. He changed music. He grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. He would get beat up for the way that he played. I don't think that's an apocryphal story. And then you're also, this is like an effeminate speaking African-American man in Texas at that time. So there's, but the salient point here was in that relationship that Amir had when they were recording or creating, right in that crucible that you're talking about, Ornette said, "The idea has no destiny."
Wow. And Ornette was very successful.
He was.
He achieved a certain level of temporal success, recognition, money, all of it, no?
Absolutely. He wore beautiful silk suits when he performed.
Wow.
The idea has no destiny, because if you think about it, when you're creating, right, if like a good idea or what we think is a good idea arises, or that juicy moment of becoming, we don't know where it's coming from. It just moves through us. How long between that moment and in your head, like, I'm going to make a record, I'm going to do a tour, whatever, right, all these other things come up. And they're like, those are like thieves in that moment of creativity, because they're keeping you from just being with what's arising.
Well, and this brings, you know, Trungpa Rinpoche back into the conversation, because he was interested in this aspect, and saying that you should just merge with the creative process and not worry about this other stuff. You know, it's interesting when you think about it, was he a writer? Well, not really. Those books of his that are out there were transcribed by students and edited and published. And they've sold millions of copies. Of course, he's been dead for 35 years, so, you know, it didn't benefit him particularly. But selling millions of books by any person's attribution is a successful career as a writer of whatever. And so how much, to what extent, when somebody's, and I think we know this as, you and I are both artists / entrepreneurs. We end up being the band leader, we're the orchestrator, the conductor, whatever, you know, we're the producer, we're ending up in the business end of the thing. And we've also worked with artists who just wouldn't even know which side of the bed to get up on, but are like genius level creatives. So the question is there, you have to follow your own bent. And I recently, Mike, you know, for creativity, spirituality, and making a buck, I thought of maybe I bit off more than we could chew in that book, in that title, even though it's intriguing possibility. And I thought of the next version of the book when they publish it is going to be Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck, Pick 2. and just go, okay, that's, you can't have it all. And, you know, it's arguable whether you can. So if you're a creative, let's just coming back to that. And if you fully have a vision and has no commercial dimension to it whatsoever, and you become in service of manifesting that, whatever, Michelangelo, you know, is there any such thing as pure creativity that is not based on having some extension into livelihood dimension and therefore other people and therefore dealing with other people in a compassionate bodhisattva-like way? That's kind of the summary of, and I don't even want to answer that. I mean, I just want to throw it out there for like-minded people to contemplate, chew on. And this would be a good discussion to have, you know, in a workshop or something.
Well, we invite everybody into the conversation, right?
Gosh, I wonder if there's a way to do David's view that would be have other people coming in, like in a group, you know, and people could at the end chime in. That might be interesting, actually, just have to be a little webinar-y, kind of open-faced. You know, when they talk about open-faced sandwiches, that always intrigued me.
Such a good metaphor.
Yeah, like there's no top bread on it. It's just like the you see what's in the sandwich. I wonder if we can have an open-faced David's view. Let's contemplate that, okay?
Yeah, well, if it was open face, maybe we could involve the creative process somehow in it. Like there could be some creative medium happening in conversation within this framework. And then that leads into a conversation with anybody who wants to hang out.
Well, and that was the vision for Creativity, Spirituality, Making a Buck, is that it would have that kind of communal mess hall kind of aspect to it. So maybe that's something we can explore further. And of course, I have explored this with many very powerful minds in the podcast. You know, we've had all kinds of people come on, and I'm asking them questions like this to see where they landed with it. You know, your friend Robert Ryan?
Yeah. He's amazing. Oh, my God.
Who did your tattoo, right?
He's done a lot of my tattoos. Yeah, I'm a regular.
Right.
When he tattoos, we talk about spirituality. I come out of there every time with like a teaching. Mm. It's amazing. So, I mean, it would be amazing to have him involved. But we did Julian Lage at when we were in person at the Tibet House. We meditated. There was a discussion. There was Q&A, you know, and it was, and maybe we could do that, a hybrid thing like that.
Well, yeah, and Tibet House is right there. I did teach there 2 weeks ago, and it's sort of, and it was a hybrid. That's a really good idea. Go back to the original thing that we were talking about 2 years ago when Worldus Interruptus happened and everybody went back into their caves. Yeah, that the original vision, and when we did those workshops live, you know, the Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck workshop, we would have people share their artwork and also share their journey with it. But part of the reason is because I haven't heard of yet a Buddhist enclave aggregation in which creativity is considered like a really powerful and ongoing topic. Yes, business, the business world has it. Yes, politics and social activism, but creativity in a Buddhist sort of crossover, like the crossover between the creative and the bodhisattva visions, and how they might interlace, because Buddhism has really leaned obviously towards the Buddhist version of it, which is if you would sell, you would give away your guitar if somebody needed, just give it to them, you know. So is there a process of exploration in which creativity is not poo-pooed as a kind of ego-centered activity, but a fundamental source of communion, community, life force energy, expression, power, shifting perspective, all those great things?
Well, I know we're moving towards wrapping up. So one, this will be our aspiration, right? So
we talked about it.
Maybe we should get some music therapists on here. Like I'm going into music therapy as a field. So talking about sort of the merging of music and bodhisattva activity. And I've been studying for a couple of years at Montclair State University. And now these are people who have chosen to use their creativity with livelihood and the success being healing and well-being. And it is, the literature in the fields is profound. Music is its own expression of health. Creativity is its own expression of health and well-being. And there's really beautifully articulated theories and practices based around it that I find super humbling to be moving towards. So, and that's creativity. It's not as, it's a service in a health service, right? So a lot of times in our system, creativity, we're talking about a service or a commodity when we're talking about livelihood. So
right.
It's a different kind of being in music and creativity with people.
Yeah. It's so interesting thinking again about our friend in Denmark, who's it's part of the well-being of the community and the government, is said, of course, music's important. Are you kidding me? Of course, it's as important as, you know, all these other things. It's a different culture. And it's called Europe. Everybody should visit every once in a while. It's easy to, you know, pluck out some really positive elements of European culture because it's refined over so long a period of time. Not saying they're immune, but let's keep this convo going. Also, let's add a sort of how do people write in if they want to comment?
Anybody who wants to comment, send me an email at michaelk@dharmamoon.com. I'll reiterate this in the show notes at the end. And you can also find me on social media on Instagram at MK4President. That's a good communication point for me. MKFORPRE President.
Yeah. Okay. You got my vote, Mike. And thanks, everybody. We'll be seeing you soon.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everyone. All the best.
Bye-bye.
There you have it, friends. Another episode of David's View on the Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast on the Be Here Now Network. We would like to thank you all for listening. We sincerely hope that you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. And as we mentioned at the end there, if anybody would like to write in, you can reach me at michaelk@dharmamoon.com or find me at MK4President on Instagram. That's MKFORPresident. And if you would like to hear more podcasts, please head over to BeHereNowNetwork.com/David. We would like to thank everyone at Be Here Now for their support in this podcast and for all the great work they do continuing Ram Dass's legacy. We are grateful to be a part of the network. And if you'd like to connect with David and our community, head over to www.dharmamoon.com. We always have a lot going on the schedule. We have a teacher training coming up, as I mentioned earlier, and we would love for you to join us. All right, I think that's all the announcements for today. May you be safe, healthy, happy, and at ease. And remember, the idea has no destiny. All the best.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/BeHereNow.